concept of Bob Marley and Stand Up For Your Right. I'm interested in knowing what you think about this and what we can also learn from the Kenyan way. Text us on WhatsApp 055-111-1997, 055-111-1997 on WhatsApp. So on Zoom, Agnes Olu is connecting with us all the way from Kenya, and she's a journalist. Agnes, it's good to have you connect with us. Agnes, can you unmute? Okay, so we'll fix Agnes's connection and then get back.
Good evening to you. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Agnes. Thanks for connecting with us all the way from Kenya. Abdul Karim Ibrahim, he describes himself as a retired journalist. I don't know how old is he, but he is keen critic of Ghana's protest culture. He's been following the Kenyan protests, has shared some incredible thoughts, and is connecting with us on the show tonight. Abdul Karim, thanks for connecting with us. Hello, Karim.
Hi, Kuku.
Yes, good. Thanks for connecting. Chris Atadika is a former GRASAC president. He's also currently a PhD student studying for his doctoral degree. Chris, good to have you.
Thank you for having me. Good evening.
And then joining me right in studio is Selom Dramani Jamado, a serial protester built like Bernard Mona. You would see him at most protests, and he has endured his own fair share of police brutality. He shared some pictures of an anniversary of some bullets hitting him. Selom, it's good to have you join us in the studio.
Yeah, Kweku, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here to discuss the Kenyan protest.
Right, so let me start from Agnes. And Agnes has been right at the heart of this protest right there in Kenya. What triggered all of this? We know the finance bill had become so unpopular, but what really led to this massive, mobilization of Kenyans to hit the streets, particularly in Nairobi?
Thank you very much for having me. I would say that it is the pressure of life, economic pressures to be specific. So I think Kenyan people just felt that enough is enough. We've given taxes until we cannot remit taxes anymore. And so now that you find that the grown-ups or even the big people, if I may say, were not sure what to do. And so when the young people noticed the laxity, that's when they started the campaign that we have to stand out to be counted. Our parents have tried. They've not succeeded. Let us try. At least we'll be defeated when we are trying instead of just staying, remaining seated to suffer in the name of paying excessive taxes. And so, yeah, that was the point. That was the beginning of the protests.
I mean, Agnes, are Kenya known for these kinds of protests? Have you had similar protests of such huge and massive nature in recent years, or this was quite an outlier?
We have had protests. We have had very huge protests. But what normally happens is that you find that perhaps the police normally overpower the protesters, because in most occasions you find that the protesters are when they are threatened by the police. Maybe if the police shoot on air, they'll always disperse and abandon the protest. But now something mysterious with this particular recent protest is that this is a kind of generation, a youth generation that call themselves Generation Z. And unfortunately, our to be specific, this particular generation, their protests are organized by leaders who are anonymous. Unlike the protests that have gone ahead, normally they are normally known leaders for the protest, who are able to be called upon maybe by the government or even being called by the church leaders. They negotiate and maybe they forego the protest. But now with this particular one, even the government is not aware who the leader of this protest is. At all, if they are holding people responsible, they are only holding people responsible just by suspecting that this and this might be the organizers or might be the leaders, but in actual sense, they're not sure if those are the leaders. And those people who are arrested, they also confess that they are not leaders, and for sure they are not leaders. So you can imagine dealing with anonymous group, dealing with an energetic youth with a known leader. It's quite hectic.
Thanks, Agnes. Please hold it there for me. And I mean, Chris, we've had something similar in the country. We had E-Levy at the height of it, the protests, ENTU at the mall. It quite didn't get anything. You've heard the chilling details that has been put out. Quite similar to the situation we've had here, but we never got there. Why? What do you surmise is the reason?
Okay, so there are several reasons that have attributed to young people involvement in, you know, public civic activities and civic engagements generally. I believe that it's an accumulation of issues, or let me say political activities, that have resulted in this particular situation that we find ourselves in, where young people do not really want to come out in their numbers to engage. One of it is the politicization of state agencies. So the state agencies that are supposed to be in charge of representing the interests of the people over the years has had members, active members of political parties manning, you know, the leadership of these agencies. And when that happens, it so happens that the people do not represent the interests of the larger society, but the interests of the political party that put them in that particular position. So young people generally have lost faith in the political system as a result of the politicization of state agency. Also, over the period, we've seen that there's a particular trend where because protests are being organized because of political gains, or people use protests as a way to announce their presence politically and to gain some political capital for let's say a future political position. And that is why people even attribute the Kwame Preko demonstration back in the day to this current president at the time, who was one of those who spearheaded that particular demonstration as a way to announce himself as a human rights, you know, lawyer and somebody who represents the people. Some have argued that that particular demonstration was to announce his, you know, political let's say ambitions, I mean, for the future. And it's evident he's now the president. Also, there have been issues of fear mongering around demonstrations. So you see it being paraded around that you have to be safe. If you do go out there, the police are going to shoot you. You know, so that general sense of fear that is being, you know, put out there concerning, you know, demonstrations and participation in demonstrations is the reason why young people do not want to. And one last thing that I would also attribute to it, because I actually conducted a study on it, is the marketing of, protests. Generally, if you do not market the event and sell the event as one that people will get people to be interested in and want to be a part of, people are not going to, you know, want to participate in it. I remember when I was collecting data for this particular study, I inquired from a lot of young people to ask them reasons why they didn't partake in the Fix the Country demonstration and Occupy Jollobee House demonstration. One of the things that they said was they didn't have adequate information about, you know, the protest, which means that there is a gap, inefficiency in advertising, you know, information about the protest. Some also say that they felt that it was just a thing on social media, but they didn't think it was actually going to be a demonstration that started on social media that is going to result in a physical form of demonstration. And so because they didn't think it was going to result in something more physical, they didn't, you know, show up at the demonstration ground. It's
a gamut of issues.
Of issues that have, you know, compounded over the period that have resulted in young people not not participating in demonstrations.
Right. I'm interested to know what Karim thinks about all these reasons that you've given out, and I'll come to him pretty shortly. Also about the situations of the institutions and how they responded. But Selom, you have done a lot of protest, and then now you hear from from Chris that lays out, for instance, there's poor marketing of these protests, a lot of these issues that you guys do not do. What do you put down to the failure of protest in Ghana to largely achieve something big?
Kwegu, once again, thank you very much. And let me use this opportunity to congratulate our fellow African brothers and sisters in Kenya who have summoned up the courage to pour into the streets to demand from their government to withdraw the finance bill, which eventually has been withdrawn, or the president has rescinded his decision to assent his signature to it. Kwegu, indeed, I've been demonstrating for about 20 years now. I have been in demonstrations that have been peaceful. I've been in demonstrations that have turned violent. One that I immediately recall was in 2006, about 18 years ago, when we were protesting the ROPAB, Representation of People's Amendment Bill. We protested that because we thought that it would not enhance the democracy, our democracy, our nascent democracy, so to speak. So we protested it. I think the first one was on the 14th of February, 2006. That one, it was peaceful. The second one was on 21st of February, 2006. That was violent one. It turned violent at the Castle Junction. Kwegu, people do not pour into the streets nowadays to protest. And the gentleman on Zoom have adduced so many reasons for why people do not show up. Kwegu, the thing is this. It's a mark of disillusionment. People are just disillusioned because people who have led demonstrations in the past, most of them have turned out to be hypocrites. Like they propagated something in the past that time has revealed that they did not actually believe in the things they propagated or protested. If, for instance, somebody spearheaded or led a protest to put pressure on the government to not to implement VAT, okay? And those individuals came to power some few years later and now increase VATs. So that definitely would get some people who participated in that demonstration disappointed and disillusioned. So, and the other thing is, what you sent me, you mentioned, you asked whether Ghanaians are docile or have become timid. Timidity and docility, yes, there are signs like that. Because one, the political parties in this country have succeeded to emasculate the strength of the youth. The courage of the youth have been gilded, they have been emasculated. So they now see things from partisan perspective. So if there's a demonstration that is to take place tomorrow, and it's about their own economic well-being, they would wait to hear whether their party, the political leadership is in support of it before they participate. You remember when we picketed parliament for about 8 days? You were always with us during the picket.
Yeah, I was covering.
Correct. And the thumbs up to you for always being there for us. Look, there were known NDC stalwarts, known NDC supporters, known NDC members of parliament who would not even want to catch a whiff of us, the picketers, there. Because at the time we were doing that picket, there was no clear message from their leadership whether they were in support of what we were doing there. So they didn't want to have anything to do with us. I remember a couple of them that who were walking past us, you call them, they will never respond. Okay? There were known MPP MPs.
and MPP supporters who called us behind the scene to mount relentless pressure on Ken Oforiatta to withdraw the e-levy. So you understand that. So let me use this opportunity to tell Ghanaians that when you believe, if you have that faith, that fervent faith in your party, it's not going to work. Pour into the street, because those individuals, they have their own parochial interests they pursue.
Please hold it there for me. I'll come back to you. I like the tangent you're going on, setting proper context for this. But Karim, these reasons that you've adduced, you've heard from the table, you've heard from Chris, you've heard from Selom here in the studio. In Ghana, we have a public order act. And in fact, there are those who have argued that we cannot even have that kind of spontaneity in terms of the protest, because you need to notify the police for several days. You need to go meet with them. Sometimes they'll go to court, they will injunct you and all that. And then you see in Kenya the spontaneity of this protest and the response of institutions. Really, where do you stand on that?
Well, Kobe, thank you. And so first of all, I think it's important for me in particular to draw this point out there, that it's also very crucial to, in trying to understand the Ghanaian case, to not treat protests as an end in themselves, right? And that the culture that allows it or impedes it takes a long time to evolve to the status that we find it. And so the general sense of docility or lack of bravery that we see among Ghanaian folks, the youth especially, and all of that, comes from a certain place. But in terms of why, and again, like, just to quickly also touch a bit on the analogy that you create in terms of the spontaneity among other things. For those ones, no existing law would save the state if it doesn't do what they must do.
Exactly.
The same with what happened in Kenya, and as we saw, for instance, in Tunisia with Mohamed Bouazizi, which also sprung off and gave us what we have come to know as the Arab Spring, and many other massive protests like that. They do not always require an individual to trigger or a deliberate process to set a date beforehand and all. And so if, for instance, the political elite in Ghana considers that they would have a safety because of the law that we have set out, they could be mistaken. But that's what also brings me to the why I was saying earlier that I don't want this protest to look as though they are an end in themselves. Because the way to get there is important. And then for what reason we are protesting is also particularly important. And so when I heard someone talk about how we have sort of emasculated protest culture in the country and all, and you of all people would appreciate this even the most. And a lot of people dismiss it, but I think it's extremely crucial. So we have seen the complicity of universities, academic institutions, also building up and adding their support to this attempt to completely make all of us, the Ghanaian youth, first of all, miss the most important issues to galvanize around, and two, the limits for our protest. And so we are seeing it in this clampdown that we are seeing at the universities. There's no dispute that, of course, the protests that we have seen with Commonwealth, Mensa Sabah Hall, and the others have caused problems. And so has many other protests in this country. But we have allowed for universities today, the place for the best example of how one can express themselves, to almost entirely shut defense in a way that does not go with the interests and the expectations of university authority. We see the same thing with the state more broadly. So the way that we deploy our police, among many other things, all depict that. The problem with this is that we come from this very infantile, very naive position that Ghana is special. We are somewhat pathologically known for peace, among many other things. That's a big lie. And if we appreciate how these protests are happening, the very cosmopolitan nature of it, the nearly global nature of it in terms of how they do. So look at NSAS. Look at the protests that we have seen in Kenya. You can see the striking resemblance between that and other forms of protests that we have seen, for instance, in the United States, or even more recently, what we have seen with Palestine, among many other things. The very many young people, the progressive ones, tend to also agree on many of these other problems. So the way out for Ghana may be such that, well, we do not or are not going to immediately see it in the sense of how we want it, But it is something that we cannot run away from. And if anybody at all, I mean, I think the member of parliament for the Dio, is it Honorable
Nilanti,
he found himself there in Kenya, right? And when he spoke about this, he could see how he was trembling, among many other things. I will end it, Kwaku, with just one point here. I was on this show some time ago when the pensioners, bondholders were picketing and Free the Country guys went to support them. You know what the leader of the group said? I think Dr. Ananiye J or something.
Ananiye J.
What he said, and I was on the show with Felicity Hardy of Economic Fighters League, among others, that the way that young people go about their protest is why they don't achieve anything. And that at the time, the Minister of Finance had promised them that they were going to pay their money. Do you know the funny thing? Months later, even this year, they were back there trying to get their money again.
Only yesterday, because they were back there protesting.
Fantastic. So the final thing that I'll say is that this idea, that this pacifist approach where we appeal to authority, even when they are screwing us all over, right? We've seen the corruption that's going on in this country and all of that. We've seen our Attorney General and Minister of Justice engage in extrajudicial engagement in a way that affects the case of somebody that we are trying for corruption, for embezzling state resources or causing financial loss, among other things. But see how we have engaged all of this. Archbishop Duncan Williams is mute. When we have a problem, he would rather pray for the Ghana City to rise instead of telling John Mahama, who was president then that you're messing up. So all of that, when the revolution happens, we will not be taking water from Archbishop Duncan Williams like the Kenyans were taking from the Catholic bishops who were there. If they don't speak up early enough, when it happens, we'll listen to them. Because at the end of the day, they are all together. They have formed this coalition, elite consensus, where sometimes they'll come and give us all the moral grandstanding and tell us what Christ wants us to do, so that when NPP steals, we turn the other cheek for NDC to come and steal. But insofar as we don't get onto the streets there, invade the Jubilee House or invade Parliament, then we are well behaved. And for that matter, that's good enough for them. That cannot be. And the day for when they would all have to realize this and perhaps run away from it is coming. They better speak about it now and do something than to wait for what we've seen in other places if they don't want it.
I mean, Chris, I want to bring you in on regarding this point that Karim made about dissent on campus. And you are an academic. You are closely affiliated to the University of Ghana. You know the Vice Chancellor, you know the Dean of Student Affairs and all that. The University of Ghana is actively clamping down on protests. In fact, today on University of Ghana campus, you cannot as much even make a whimper. You cannot even assemble in four or five without the university coming down heavy on you. And that is the university where students of conscience has to develop consciousness. Do you agree with that line of thought that Karim brings up, that the university is playing a part in why protest culture in Ghana is almost non-existent?
Okay, so, I mean, the university upholds the principle of academic freedom, which simply states that the academic society should have that free will to, engage in academic activities, not having any undue influence by people in higher power or in higher authority, especially people in political authority. So, I mean, for me, I would say that over the years, like I said earlier, generally in our society, there has been that discouragement of people participating in general civic engagement. It's not necessarily even about demonstrations, but even voting, people going out to the polls. I mean, today, for example, I was in a conversation with somebody, and this is a senior citizen. He was telling me that because of the events that have happened over the period, he is even considering not voting this particular year. So generally, you've seen that increasingly people have lost faith in the system, and that should even be more reason why they should be pouring out on the streets to go out to demonstrate when they are dissatisfied with government, you know, decision on particular issues. But here is the case that we find or we see these people refraining from it because there is that element of fear mongering, you know, I mean, among people that you don't go out there, you might inhale, you know, the tear gas, you might be beaten by the police and that sort of thing. So I believe that if it's not also for the politicization of our state agencies, the outfit like the Ghana Police Service should even let young people or let the general public know that they are free to demonstrate. They are not there, I mean, to harm any citizen. They are there to, you know, protect the citizens during the demonstration exercise. But the question is, we do not see that.
Yeah.
Every time we have a demonstration, you rather see, you know, police officers, you know, heavily armored, you know, as if they are coming to, you know, face citizens that have, you know, guns and arms.
Yeah.
I mean, you are just coming to face people who have placards. So I feel that it's a combination of a lot of things.
Okay.
I mean, for young people, particularly in the universities, I personally think that the political organizations, the youth political organizations that have been formed in the various universities are also a reason why, you know, the young people do not see a need to participate.
I mean, Tain and Tescon on campus, and they are all really driving members to see things from a certain viewpoint. Thank you very much, Chris, and hold it there for me. I'll come back to you as we prepare to hit the top of the hour. But I mean, Salom, Karim talked about pastors, okay, the ecumenical councils.
Yeah,
we've seen in Kenya these people hitting the streets with these protesters, handing them out water and all that.
Yeah.
Karim says, listen, don't be praying for the city or praying for politicians instead of telling them straight into the face what they are doing wrong. Because when you continue to do this, quote-unquote, hypocritical acts, and it gets to the time and there is a quote-unquote revolution, we will not, or we will probably see you as part of them. Everyone has the way of engaging in this, right? Maybe you want to hit the streets. Duncan Williams want to talk directly to the politicians as a way of bringing change. Do you not see that point?
Yeah. I think you are right. We cannot all have the same position on the same a policy. Maybe I want to hit the street, like you rightly said. Somebody wants to pray to God to touch the heart of the politicians or the duty bearers. I believe in manifesting my frustration, anger, disappointment in the street, because I believe that is the potent antidote to fight the kind of system we have. Kweku, on Saturday, 28th February 1948, something significant took place in the life of this country, which actually set the tone or triggered and sparked our struggle for independence. It was through a street protest. That is an event that I recall. I always use to drive my passion for exhibiting my feelings in the streets. It works. You talk about spontaneity. The spontaneous eruption of anger will soon take place in this country, which may even disrupt our elections if we don't do our things well. Because what is happening is that people are just holding this thing. Okay, maybe we have some few months to election. Let's see what the NDC is also promising. Meanwhile, those individuals, it's not like they have a rock-solid faith. That the NDC has the magic wand to wave, to turn things round. You understand? Look, because of what we do, those in the security service, they are always in touch with some of us because we speak for them. They cannot demonstrate. They cannot come into the street, for instance, to demonstrate. I remember when on June 4th, when we were arrested at the Revolution Square, together the Ghana Action Network members, were arrested by the police at the Revolution Square because we wanted to use that place to send a message to those occupying the Jubilee House that the circumstances that led to the 1979 revolution, those circumstances are back. And they are in their worst form. So if we don't check our staffs, we are likely to that revolution. It's likely to rear its ugly head again in this country. We are arrested. That thing never deterred us. We told the police to their faces that as soon as we are bailed, we will go back. We will light this perpetual flame. So we took the thing to a brass spot. Circa. We did our thing there. Look, there was a soldier, a soldier in his fatigue, who shouted my name. Dramani, we are with you. Continue. Look, the energy in his voice that day sent a signal. And those around said, ah, that's a soldier. I said, yes. Those guys are in touch with us. Because what they do not want to do is that some of them, they tell us, we have done coups. Now we want you people now to do a protest to actually tell the politicians what exactly you want done.
Right. And yes, and obviously, I think in this day and age, all of us agree that coups are not the right way to go, right?
No,
coups,
no.
Coups are not the right.
But protests are the right way to go.
Definitely, in terms of getting out on the streets.
That's what we termed as a comprehensive, organized, universal protest, COUP.
But that is not cool of overthrowing the government. Thank you. Salam Holden. Agnes, do you sense that the protests in Kenya have come to an end since the finance bill have been withdrawn, or there are still pockets of protests all over the place in Kenya? Agnes is on Zoom. Agnes, can you unmute? Yes, I can hear
after,
you.
After the president rejected to sign that controversial bill, actually in Kenya we thought that the protests were over, but yet again the Generation Z or Generation Z have yet again come up with a list of demands. Among them is that they want the president to abolish all the offices created in government which are not constitutional, and so activists went to court way before for those offices to be abolished, but unfortunately they've never been abolished. So they want the president first to obey the court orders, because among the reasons they want these offices abolished, they say that taxpayers are paying so much to these people occupying those offices, yet they're unconstitutional. And so apart from that particular demand, also another major demand is that now they want the president to resign, because they've lost trust with him. And so I wouldn't say that the protests have ended or they'll happen. So it's still a situation of waiting to see what will happen. And apart from that, you realize now this generation, they've taken over and they've occupied churches, they've occupied public events. For instance, they're not allowing more politicians to go to the pulpit. They're accusing religious leaders of being beneficiaries of these public coffers which are being stolen. And so the only way out is that they've barred politicians from attending these particular events. The news that just came in, the first lady, that is the wife to the president, was supposed to be attending a fundraiser in a church. The bishop or the leadership of that church received a communication from these youths saying that we don't want to see any fundraisers in churches. These monies which are being brought to churches are proceeds of corruption. And so should you dare allow these politicians, or should you dare allow First Lady to come for a fundraiser in your church, we will come and occupy your church. And so just apart from that, also these MPs who voted for the bill, who voted yes for the bill, irrespective that the president declined to sign that particular bill, the youth are saying it's not over yet. We based our trust on you politicians. We based our trust on you parliamentarians. But you've gone ahead to betray us. And we'll follow you because you've betrayed us. You've forced us to come out from our hiding place. And then something, again, which is so unique with this protest is that they don't want any political leader, even the opposition, to come out and say that they're like, just leave us alone. We want to do this alone, because if you politicians...
Recording stopped.
I mean, she was really giving us an idea of what exactly is still going on there in Kenya. But Karim, there's something about this protest in Kenya that really stood out for me. Where you had the Chief Justice of Kenya put out a statement on the night of the protest asking
Recording in progress.
Asking the government to produce any person they've arrested before the court in 24 hours, reminding the politician, the political class, the police, the soldiers, of the rights of the people. And in fact, the courts have been expeditiously dealing with some of these cases. These are some of the things that I can't think of will be happening in Ghana as soon as possible. It wouldn't even be happening around this protest. That is, even if the protest has not even been injuncted in the first place.
Yeah, and it's a very interesting thing, but I would respond to that very quickly. Let me just do this. On a bit about the Archbishop Duncan Williams, of course, I mean, anybody can choose not to protest. And of course, I haven't attended as many protests as I'm talking about here. But it's also about how religion or the church, and by extension, the mosque, if you would say, has been used in many ways to sort of launder the images of political authority, because they do know that we are exceptionally religious. And for me, it is the way that they act very passive and inactive about their position. That's the problem that I have here. And so, yes, they can stay in their room whatsoever. But when the economy is struggling, and they know very well that it is not some devil who has come to take the situation somewhere, they should tell them about the corruption and tell them right in their face. But aside from that, I think that it's important that you raise this point, because it's also part of the culture that I talk about. I cannot see, as I sit here, that my Chief Justice Gertrude Tokonu would get up and act the way that we have seen from Kenya, in a way that shows fidelity to the people and not to the political appointing authority. When young Ghanaians wanted to embark on another protest sometime in December last year, we're told essentially that this December is for party, right? And so we're prevented from doing so. And so if you look at the institutions that we have, there's nothing that reposes confidence in the average Ghanaian youth, for instance, to also want to hit the street. That is not to say don't hit the street, but the way that oftentimes we talk about, that's why I wanted to have this conversation situated properly, that protests must not be viewed as an end in themselves. We'll see that at every point in time, we'll get some violence against people. In Kenya, we've seen people die, actually. So it's not so easy. And oftentimes, it's not so convenient for many people to be able to do.
I mean, the point that Karim makes, and I think we had a challenge with our Zoom, we'll fix it there. The point Karim makes about, I mean, in December, a group of protesters, they'd apply to the police. Of course, they did inform the police, just as the public other access. And when they did go there, the police did go to court to injunct them. A court actually granted the injunction, saying that December is for enjoyment, it's for partying. The police do not have enough men to guarantee you your fundamental right to protest. It's something that I've never been able to get over. As a young journalist covering a lot of court cases, a lot of these things, the police seem to be having such an upper hand whenever they have to go to court. It's almost guaranteed that when the police go to court, a court will grant them an injunction application. Sure. And Selom, that's how we just about to wrap up.
Yeah, Kweku.
How daunting is that for you protesters? Whenever the police have to go to court, and the court is almost certain to grant the injunction, and you can't have that protest.
Kweku, the unfortunate situation we have in this country is that our state agencies, or those whose allegiance should be with the state, or they should show that allegiance to the state, what they do instead is to show or to have the allegiance to the government of the day. So let's say the Chief Justice, for instance. The Chief Justice is beholden to her appointor. So her allegiance is first of all to her appointor, but not to the state. Meanwhile, Article 1, clause 1 of the Constitution says that the sovereignty of Ghana resides in the people of Ghana, in whose name and for whose welfare the powers of government are to be exercised. Okay? So it means that state institutions must show that fidelity to the sovereignty of Ghana, which resides in us, the people of Ghana. When you go to the police, for instance, you know, sometimes it's about how recruitments are even done these days. You understand the recruitment. So I always say, if you are the IGP of this country, you are the IGP of the Ghana Police Service, and you know that the recruitment that is being done, or politicians are breathing down your necks to do a recruitment in a way that will not make you achieve your world-class police. Look, Kweku, you resign.
Yeah.
And let them know that, look, I intend to achieve this thing for the good people, or for my country. That is to achieve a world-class police. But what you're doing, I cannot achieve that. So I'm sorry, take your job. I'm not going to I'm no longer going to be your IGP. All right. That's all.
Mm.
So the police, they have their pension. Look, my interaction with the police have even revealed something. Kweku, it's not the police. You see, it's the politicians. That is why sometimes when the police tell us, don't use this place, look, the group I belong, we defy. Look, the Ghana Action Network, which I lead now, it's a group that is made up of radicals. Because we want to take radical stance on issues. So if, for instance, we know that Ghanaians are suffering, like Karim rightly talked about, that there is something that we have an attorney general who is embattled, he's embroiled in something. That person must not continue to be the attorney general. He himself must step down. But that is not what is happening.
But that is
if you want to demonstrate to the Jubilee House to petition the president, and the police says, no, you can't go to the Jubilee House, the group I belong will defy it and go.
We'll end the show.
It takes radicals to build a society, not moderates.
Not moderates. Ghanaians are not timid people, as has been suggested in the foreign press. They, far from it, they may be slow to anger and may take time to organize and act. But once they are ready, they strike, and strike hard. It pays no one to tamper with Ghanaian freedom and dignity. That is Ghana's founder and first president, Kwame Nkrumah. And that's how we end the show on Ghana Connect today. That as a people, we must all come together and demand what is our right and ensure that we live in dignity, in equal dignity as a people. And in fact, the song that we started with, that's all it says. Simple life, that is what people expect. This has been Ghana Connect. My name is Kweku Asante. We'll be with you again, same time next week. Thank you, Agnes, all the way from Kenya, giving us all the lowdown in Kenya. Abdul Karim Ibrahim, always a delight to connect with you. And then, Chris Atadika, thank you very much. And then, Salom Dramani Jamado. We're back again, same time next week, with Ghana Connect.